who was it that you were serving, and what were their needs?
Arthur, Jeanette, do you want to start, or do you want me to?
Well, the population at that particular time would have been probably a little around 3,500 people. And, you know, it was around in the middle to late 70s when the town started blowing up. And, of course, now, I guess we're now around 9,000 people, as I understand it. So, mostly working class people. We now, you know, have people building $350,000 and $450,000 homes. So the people have changed. There's no two ways about it.
The year that I was there, this is Susan again, there was kind of an investigation by the medical society as to this strange new clinic, and a very, very nice physician, older physician, came over and looked through our records and talked to our staff and left telling me this looks better than my office ever did, and that was the end of it. It went away.
Oh, so there was no big opposition from the established community?
Well, that's what it would have been. I guess they sent a guy over.
Right.
You know, a very nice man over who seemed a little embarrassed that he came
right.
in and kind of, you know, asked to be shown around and to see what we were doing, and he left impressed, and that was it. I never received a piece of paper at the beginning or the end. It was just, it went away.
Oh, interesting.
I think it was also helpful that Peter was a staff member of what was in the Exeter Clinic.
Right.
Right.
That
right.
And that was serving insured patients.
And that's what happened with Sally Oxnard when she came. She was our first full-time physician and has been our medical director right up until last year when she stepped down as corporate medical director and now is just the associate medical director for the Newmarket office. And her husband is a physician. It was at the then Exeter Clinic. That she brought us a lot of credibility.
Mm-hmm.
We still had some issues with the local community because they didn't like the fact that we were 9 to 5 because we didn't have 24/7 full call coverage. Judy just arrived.
Okay.
And we're going to give her a minute to catch her breath, and then she can give us just a little bit of background of when she joined and what her role in the early history was.
I'm just trying to get a sense of the early days right now.
Well, actually, I came in and see one person after Susan.
You were also a board member.
Well, I was a board member, yeah, right. I was part of the move to Elm Street, purchasing of that building.
Right.
And getting our first federal grant out of the North Isles Boston region.
What was the dollar amount?
$45,000 on the very first one that made us a 330. There was $90,000 in sweep-up money, and Senator Tom McIntyre helped us get half of it. The other half went to a clinic in Vermont, I heard. So we got $45,000, which was the big make-or-break issue to keep us alive that year in 75.
Okay, so 75 was your first 330 grant?
Yes.
Okay.
After that, when I came on board, there was a small grant of sweep-up money for renovating the building, renovating Elm Street. It was something like $22,000, as I recall.
It's interesting. If you listen to Ken Brown from the regional office, he tells of the story how for the first year and a half, he funded Newmarket, but didn't tell central office. It took creative people to get community health centers going. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. When we first hired our very first and long accounts receivable clerk, she would go hit people up at the beauty parlor if they didn't pay. So we'd say, well, you know, this patient owes for 2 visits, and that's $10. And she'd say, oh, I'm going to have my hair done on Wednesday. I'll speak to her then. And I remember that when she would call people and say, gee, we really need, you know, some help on collecting, the amount of $5 was small even then. It was nice because it was in French. We were really, really reaching deeply into the community
mm-hmm.
as far as folks from the community working at the center.
You mentioned before Alan Cohen from UNH, and what kinds of help did you get from him?
He was a board member then and becoming board chair. And so he was not only the guy that was kind of heading up the board, but in many ways was one of our best boosters. I remember when we decided to go out on our first very formal fundraising effort, Alan sat there at a board meeting and announced what he and his wife Joyce were going to put in personally, and it was a huge check for us. It was $500, kind of startling for everybody, uncomfortable for a lot of folks to say, oh my goodness, look what he's putting in.
Right.
But he said, you know, his theory was that you should give until it hurts, and that if he was willing to put that in, that he knew we would all, you know, look for funds elsewhere as well as contribute ourselves. So he had that kind of leadership. For me, it was also helpful that he was at the business school because I was a new director without significant management background.
Right.
So it was really nice to have somebody to complain to, cry to,
right.
Ask for support. But there was not one member of that board that didn't reach beyond their role to help.
One thing we've been talking about community boards and health centers generally is how they either have or haven't changed or influenced the direction of what the health center would be doing or things that they might be doing in addition to traditional health services. Are there any things that you would point to, different instances or services or ways that they've pushed the direction of the health center that might not have happened if it wasn't with the community participation requirement?
I can think of some very definite ones. Just on the hours alone, they wanted our board members wanted evening hours and they wanted weekend coverage. So we're open 6 days a week and we're open 4 nights a week, half a day on Saturday. It was hard for our medical director to make that happen. Today it's more of a norm. A lot of healthcare, because you have larger group practices there, it wasn't then. Having people who spend time on helping people get their enrolled in the insurances, doing the outreach and enrollment, that's a service. It's a service we're supposed to provide.
Right.
It's also a service that the community wanted. We just had a meeting today where there's really no public health network locally to do the bioterrorism stuff. So we got a tiny $5,000 grant that we're using for convening, and we called in area agencies plus some of the first responders, and we're saying, all right, let's put together our own emergency preparedness response plan. We've got our internal one. The hospital has the smallpox one.
Right.
Let's dust that off and see if we can set up a mechanism of communication and incident command. So, because we're in a rural area. And now my Nashua Center, which is as a health department, and they have dollars from the bioterrorism money federally that come to the state down to them. They've got a well-organized plan. They've already done their drills. But we have to kind of build up the basics here.
Have politics been a big factor?
And we were glad when Ronald Reagan was no longer president.
Yeah.
President Reagan was taking away he made you reapply for your medically underserved area status. That was probably, to me, the scariest time, because if that went away, everything went away.
Right.
That was your underpinning for all your grants.